I've known John since he joined Bryan Cave about 9 years before his stroke. John is one of the most outgoing people, if not the most outgoing I ever met, and still is, as you'll learn from this presentation. John is a Midwesterner. He grew up in Iowa. He became Catholic his senior year at WashU's Newman Center, so that was about, 2000, John?
Correct.
So, you know, those of you who may remember, I became a Lutheran in 2004. Yes. Had that been a direct swap, the Catholics would have been ahead of the game, but fortunately it wasn't. He went to law school at the University of Minnesota, so there's that Minnesota connection, those of you who appreciate that in the audience. So he was there until 04, and then he came to Bryan Cave. And worked for about 9 years. He's married to Cindy. And they have three kids, Ryan 8, Maggie 5, and Anna 7 months. And John's pretty comfortable in this setting because it's St. Peter's. His activities include parish council, RCIA catechist, which is a teacher in religious instruction in the Catholic faith, marriage preparation, retreat coordination, lecturing, and Eucharistic ministry. So he's, you know, very disengaged from parish life at St. Peter's. But I wanted to go back to just tee up John here. You heard Maggie was 5. John was on parental leave from Bryan Cave when he had the stroke, and I got the phone call from his wife. And so at that point in time, John went from being on parental leave, from being an active and engaged lawyer, to being an ICU unit, unable to speak, walk, or do any of the things we take for granted. 5 years later, he's got their third child, and he's here talking to you guys. So that's what he's going to talk about today.
Wow. Wow. I'm impressed. Can you hear me?
Yes.
That's important. So good. I was close to death, so I ask you, are you afraid of death? What would you die for? I use this opportunity to talk with God. As Steve said, my name is John Kinch. Thank you so much. He did a great job. I was 35 years old when I had my stroke. I was able to talk with God for hours and hours, lying in my hospital bed. God was not just an entity that I prayed to. God became my friend. Perhaps not being able to move or talk is not all bad. He gave me more time to talk with God. Instead of focusing upon how I nearly died, I chose to reframe the question. Initially, I had always asked, why me? Regarding the stroke, one therapist said she had a patient who asked, why not me? She said this may be applicable. I do my best to glorify God through my public speaking, which is difficult to my brain injury. Perhaps the axiom of why not me is appropriate for life's challenges. My father was Lutheran, and during my childhood in Iowa and my high school years, I was more concerned about my parents' divorce than finding God. I discovered my faith in college when I attended WashU and completed the RCIA program, the Rite for Christian Initiation for Adults in the Roman Catholic Church. Since that time, I have been quite active as a member of the church, the parish council, a retreat coordinator, and many other things. I attended the University of Minnesota Law School, a great law school, and worked for about 9 years at Bryan Cave, an excellent law firm, before my stroke. Cindy and I have been married 10 years, and we have 3 children, Ryan, who is 8 and goes to 3rd grade at St. Peter's School, Maggie, who is 5 and goes to preschool at St. Peter's School, and Anna, who is a little over 7 months. You'll see her later. I am not being dramatic when I say my entire life changed at age 35 when I had a stroke. It was September 10th, 2013, nearly 5 years ago. You were probably thinking about current events like the Syrian Civil War or how well the Cardinals were playing the Brewers. I was on paternity leave because our first daughter had just been born only 1 month before. Oh. Incidentally, this school picture of my children was taken on the day of my stroke. I told my son about an hour earlier to daycare, so I could easily have been in the car when it happened. Thank God I wasn't. I was at home working on the computer and I didn't feel good. I went to the bathroom. Actually, I crawled to the bathroom and threw up about 20 or 25 times. I was sweating profusely, and I knew something was very wrong. In short, I thought I was going to die. Sandy heard me throwing up and took me to the emergency room at MOBAP. I was at MOBAP for about 2 days. They thought I had vertigo. I remember having a roommate who noticed my speech was going. He called for help. There were like 15 or 20 doctors and nurses who rushed in to me. I knew I was in big trouble if that happened. I took an ambulance to Barnes Jewish Hospital when they knew I had a stroke. My head was opened up, a process called a craniotomy to relieve the swelling in my brain. I was in the ICU for about 2 weeks. I made a critical choice in the ICU, which has impacted my life to this very day. At the time, I had no idea how influential this decision would be. I had two choices. One, I could be angry or upset because the stroke happened to me. Or two, I could be positive. I did not want to live angry my entire life, and I chose the latter option. I wanted to be positive amidst the turmoil. We cannot control the circumstances that fall upon us. However, we can control our reaction to them. Maintaining a positive outlook in my life has helped me not only to deal with my stroke, but it has helped me to get better. I chose to look at the stroke with a different perspective. Yes, the situation was frustrating, but I must deal with it. I am able to understand, read, write, communicate, drive a car, use a lawnmower, use the computer and a cell phone, manage household tasks, and many other things. I focus upon what I can do instead of what I cannot do. It is how you look at an issue that actually matters. The stroke did several things to me. First, the stroke was in the cerebellum, where my balance and coordination are affected. As I discuss later, I initially couldn't talk. As Steve said, I used to be very extroverted. Yeah, people would tell me weekly, if not daily, I was the most extroverted person they had ever met.
And it wasn't close. Yeah. It's not a close second.
There wasn't a stranger to me, because I talked with everyone. People hated me on airplanes. Yeah. Second, I have a paralyzed vocal cord, which affects me to this day. The vocal cord paralysis changed my speech forever. Now I speak lower and slower. I don't even know my musical voice part when I sing. I used to love to sing. To understand the scope, I sang at about 40 weddings. And I started singing as a little kid in choir. How would you react if you could no longer do your favorite hobby? Third, the stroke affected my right side. I am right-handed, so now I write with my left. Trust me, it's harder than it sounds. Yeah. Initially, I worked with several therapists to write with my left hand. Then I completed an at-home writing program. First, I worked on legibility. Then I worked on speed. When I initially had the stroke, I couldn't talk at all. I wanted to say something, but I couldn't. It is like having permanent laryngitis or being buried alive. I use an alphabet board to speak, where I would spell out the letters to the words I wanted to say. I learned how to better listen. Before, I had to listen. Now, I choose to listen. People say fascinating things. Yeah. And as Steve knows, some lawyers love to talk. Yeah.
And talk.
Yeah. By listening to others, you are less likely to judge people. For example, you can better separate speech from intelligence. In my opinion, I believe we are all disabled. My disabilities are quite visible. Many people have invisible disabilities, such as anxiety or depression, so you don't know what a person is experiencing. I encourage all of you not to try to judge others and to truly listen. Oh. I was in a wheelchair for about 2 months. I developed extreme patience because I always had to wait for someone to push me, as I didn't have the coordination to hold the wheels of a wheelchair. I thought about every step for a better part of the year. That is exhausting. I use a wheelchair for 2 months, then a walker for 10 months, and now I don't use anything. Some therapists had never seen a stroke patient run again in therapy. When I started running, all of the therapists wanted to see it. At that time, they began calling me a miracle patient. That was weird at first, but now I've gotten used to it. I first started running in my hallway, so my physical therapy spotters could hold me. I wore a harness around my waist in therapy because I may lose my balance when I ran. At Barnes, one nurse said I may never run again. I proved her wrong. Yeah, there is a walk or run for people who have had a stroke called the Stampede for Stroke. In 2014, I walked the 1 mile in 1 hour 6 minutes. In 2017, I ran the 5K in 49 minutes. So in a few years, I increased the distance and decreased the time. Oh, thank you. Recently, I ran about 3.5 miles, so the days of being immobile are thankfully over. I have pursued hundreds of hours of therapy. I initially received help from speech, occupational, and physical therapy. At that time, I endured over 25 hours a week of various therapies plus homework for a 2.5 year period. After I completed the hospital program, I continued to challenge myself for another 657 hours and counting in outpatient therapy, doing things such as horseback riding, going back to work therapy, advanced speech therapy, hand therapy, and driving therapy. I audited 5 classes at WashU and SLU Law School to think about current legal issues. To date, I have been featured on the local news as a young stroke survivor and have been asked to talk at 34, now 35, speaking engagements. I wanted to share about how this stroke has impacted my faith. I am closer to God now. I pray much more. I am more grateful for life, and I know what is important. Society tells us to care about money, status, careers, houses, material things. Not once did I think about any of those things near death. I thought about the people in my life, my spouse, my children, my godchildren, my co-workers, and my faith. I also never doubted God once during this stroke, as many people turn away from faith during serious medical situations. I was having difficulty getting out of bed one day immediately after the stroke. In response, a good Christian friend said he saw the resurrection in me. Wow. To have that said about you is amazing. If my existence helps to glorify God, then who am I to challenge that? I now better see God through people as an example to our children, they can see God better than others too. I could not drive because of the stroke for 2.5 years. A 15 to 20 drivers have driven me over 6,000 miles on my behalf. To put this in perspective, that is from the west coast of the U.S. to Japan. I could not cook because of the stroke. Well, I couldn't cook before the stroke. Yeah. Over 200 meals were brought to our house. In fact, Steve cooked us a delicious dinner. Much better than I could. Yeah. For many months, I could not hold kids or change diapers. I was not able to hold Maggie or 1-month-old child. Many people came to assist with childcare. I was encouraged because people believed in me and prayed for me. We had yard workers, men who got me ready in the morning, babysitters, a woman who mopped our kitchen floor for 3 years. People who folded our laundry. A man who took the trash out every week. People who cleaned our bathrooms. Women who did our dishes. And other things. I trust that people felt welcomed into a positive home environment during this entire experience. Now, I am doing different things I never would have done prior to the stroke. Hundreds, if not 1,000 people have urged me to write a book about stroke recovery. In April of 2017, I was talking to a friend about the book. The insight she displayed was profound. She said, "Isn't that God calling you? Isn't that God talking to you to write a book?" I started writing the next day. I credited her with saying the thing I needed to hear at that exact moment. She does not know it, but she may have shaped my life going forward. To date, I have written 99 pages for my book, presently titled reclaiming my identity. A young stroke survivor's account. People, perhaps we think what we are supposed to do is not what we're called to do. I am called to be a father, a husband, a Christian, a friend, and a volunteer. I am an advocate for stroke. I guess an aspiring author and serve as a model for others struggling with illnesses. How have you been challenged when handling change? Oh. She's cute, isn't she? Yeah. On February 4th, 2018, our little miracle, Anna Marie Kinch, was born. Cindy said a powerful thing. She said, "We have been through hell the past few years, and it's a resurrection baby. It is great to celebrate something instead of being consumed by my stroke. As Ryan, our 8-year-old son, put it recently, Daddy, if you had died, Anna wouldn't be here." How did he know that? I surely didn't tell him that. Yeah. Oh. I want to share a story about when she was born. During her birth, I was crying profusely. I later apologized to the doctor, saying the last thing he needed was a dad falling apart with so much going on. He turned to me and said these powerful words, "You are different now. Nearly all of the parents of babies that I delivered did not almost die. You appreciate life better now." Sorry. For 4 years, I wanted to be viewed as the same as everyone else. Different was a bad thing. For the first time since the stroke, I thought about how different may be good. Ironically, Anna's birth helped me to accept my stroke. I think we all need a glimpse of something a new baby can bring hope. I have discussed the prongs of faith, hope, and love. Of these, I still believe that the greatest is love. With my family and friends supporting me, especially during prayer, I am confident I can be the best husband, parent, friend, and attorney God wants me to be. And without God in my life, I wouldn't have direction, purpose, and love. I hope these comments have been helpful. Thank you. Thanks.
You good with questions, John?
Oh, fine. I can stay here as long as you need.
I thought you had to get back and help Sydney with three.
I escaped the house. That's good.
Once you got out, now you're kind of got some flexibility.
Right.
Nathan?
Thank you very much.
Oh, yeah.
So many things about what you said made me think, but what little detail you said your working title for your book is Reclaiming My Identity, which sounds to me like trying to become the person I was. But you have now realized that you're not the person you were, and that's a good thing. So maybe a different title, like perhaps Rebuilding an Identity, or something like that.
That's a good point. Thank you. Yeah, I started writing before she was born. That's why. And that's a good point. Thank you.
You'll make it into the acknowledgments, perhaps.
Maybe. Yeah.
So you referred to your son's reaction to your daughter. Can you talk more about how maybe particularly your son, because he's the oldest, but how your children have come to understand life with father and mother?
Well, yeah, they've had to grow up. That is the short answer, because my son, my first daughter now, are reminded at school that their dad is different or weird. And Ryan said a great comment. He said he's been through enough. Don't say that about him. My kids don't know the gravity of a stroke, but they do know that my life was saved, and I wouldn't be here without doctors helping me. And they know how hard I've worked, and I hope they'll work just as hard when they get older. So I would say, at first, I thought it was a negative thing, but now it's turning into a positive thing, if that makes sense.
Yes, I'm wondering if you're detecting any greater sense of empathy on their part for others who
Yes. We went to a festival for disabled people like 2 months ago, and we saw hundreds of people in wheelchairs. My son said, "Is this for disabled people?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Good. They deserve to have fun too." That's all he said. But yeah, I think it's making an impact. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Were you a basically optimistic person prior to this?
I bet Steve can answer that.
Because he was beyond basically. He was probably the old glass half full, glass half empty. You know, John was like two glasses.
What advice would you have for those of us on the optimism pessimism spectrum that struggle with kind of sustaining positivity? Yeah. And I'm imagining that overall you did, but there were moments where it was frustrating is a word. Frustration is a real difficult spot to be in over prolonged. So how do you advise people who struggle psychologically with optimism?
I ask them, do you want to live with any regrets? If you don't do your best or approach things positively, will you regret that? If so, don't do it. If not, maybe you should reevaluate what you're doing, and that has helped a lot of people. I know when I was on the news, I told the other woman who was a young stroke survivor, this educates the public. People think stroke is only an elderly person's thing that happens. This dispels that myth. And she calmed down and helped to inform the public. I thought she did a great job. And that's an example she could have clammed up, been nervous. But she chose to say, "I am here for a reason. I need to educate people. I choose to be, I guess, positive. Yeah, the stroke happened, sure, but people need to know about it." Yeah. That's a long answer. I hope that's good.
How has your wife dealt with the changes that affect both your lives?
She's a saint. Yeah, it's short.
She was a saint before.
I thought I married a good woman. Now I know I married a good woman. The patience she's displayed is amazing, because I had still have to try things myself. And she says, "Okay, he's slow, but let him do it." Like clipping my fingernails, or shaving, or things you don't think about. And she said, for him to get better, he needs to do that himself. she has a good balance between helping me when I need it and letting me try. And that's a hard balance to find. Yeah.
Your language and your words are amazing tools for communication.
Oh, thank you.
When you talk to God, did you speak language? Did God speak language back to you?
Good question. I couldn't talk, so there was nothing coming out here. It was more mental. God knew exactly what I was thinking. So I just stopped and listened. And God spoke a lot. For example, when I thought, God, why did you keep me here? Why didn't you just take me? I thought that in the ICU. I shot her to say that out loud, but that's what I thought. And God answered me and said, you have unfinished business here. And I thought, wow, it's not like a burning bush moment. It's more, it was subtle. Came more through prayer and listening and whispers, not a big hallelujah moment. Rather, it was gradual, if that makes sense. Yeah.
Did you say something about living the resurrection inside of you? That's kind of a hallelujah moment, though.
Oh, yeah. When someone said that about me, not only did I get out of bed, I've used that as motivation ever since. Yes, things are very hard, sure. I won't deny that. But I thought, okay, someone said that. I need to try this. Yeah.
So do we.
Yeah. Yeah. And
With paralyzed vocal cords, is there any treatment? Are there any treatment options for them?
I don't think so. More speech therapy to practice things like now I'm doing lower lip movements. Mm-hmm. I used to talk like English was a second language. Steve can relate to that. Big lip movements. I do breath support and not tightening my throat. Mm-hmm. Sounding more natural. Mm-hmm. Pitch, inflection, mm-hmm. volume, things you don't think about. But yeah, to my knowledge, it's practice and therapy. There's no surgery that magically solves a paralyzed vocal cord.
It's still got the Minnesota hole.
Oh, yeah. Having 3 years there, they all talk like that. That's no exaggeration. Yeah.
Okay. I heard an interview with Christopher Reeves. Remember, he had a horse accident, broke quadriplegic. And at the time, they were trying some stimulation thing for him to be the first quadriplegic person known that would walk again. And so he was being interviewed, and he was kind of uber positive, and I'm going to walk, and this is my mindset. And one of the interviewers finally said, "And Christopher, what if you don't walk again?" He said, "Well, then I won't walk again." And it was this sort of balance between a driving goal orientation and optimism, balanced with acceptance for what is. And I'm in healthcare, and this balance between helping to prepare people, you know, realistically, I do end of life stuff, and kind of realistically talk about what's unfolding, at the same time not squelching hope and goals. And it's extremely difficult to know what and how to say things. You were obviously a person who thrived on positive images.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing I'm saying, how did you balance, though? Well, what if that, you know, the realism based with the hope and the goal?
That's something I live with, because I used to set unrealistic goals, like, I'll sing well again. I sing badly, but I sing. I should have said my goal is to sing, not sing like I used to. So it's all how I frame it. It's not something I can't attain, rather okay with work. Hard work, I can get there. Like, I want to write with my left hand. Most people who have strokes say, okay, I'm resigned to not write. I wouldn't do that. That's an example of a realistic goal. I said it won't be pretty, but now it is. But I'll try, and I'll work hard to write. Now it's second nature to write with this hand. I'm truly ambidextrous.
Can you type right-handed?
Oh, yeah.
So you can type.
Oh, it's slow. I used to type like 100 words a minute. That's an example. At first I said, I'll return to that. My therapist said, that's not possible. Be happy you can turn on a computer. Be happy you can type at all. First I started doing this, now I do this. And I would have like 5 P's if I used the right hand. Now I can control it to type with both hands. It's not easy, but that's something I keep working on.
Yeah.
And I'll stay around later if you want to talk privately.
So now you can see how John's been an example for those of us at Brian Cave who've known him. So whenever we, you know, as you say, we get negative, give me a break.